Think on your feet for our Fast and Curious 5K, a one-of-a-kind race hosted by WBEZ and the Chicago Sun-Times on Saturday, July 27th at Humboldt Park. More info and early bird registration at wbez.org/events.
A new study finds that more than two-thirds of Chicago children under 6 years old may be exposed to lead-contaminated water, and Black and Latino children are especially vulnerable. I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. Lead-contaminated water is a long-standing issue in this city, which has some 400,000 lead service lines. That's more than anywhere else in the country. Replacing all those lines is expected to take 5 decades, and that's if the city replaces around 10,000 lead lines a year. And you guessed it, the current rate is far lower than that. With residents exposed to contaminated water every day, we are diving into what solutions are needed to get us to zero. I checked in with Shakina Perry, Senior Policy Advocate for Environmental Health for the Natural Resources Defense Council. Brenda Santoyo, Water Justice Program Manager for Little Village Environmental Justice Organization. And Michael Hawthorne, Environment Reporter at the Chicago Tribune. Shakina starts with her thoughts on the findings of this study.
It just really underscores the sense of urgency that's needed to speed up the replacement of lead pipes in the city of Chicago. I think we've seen several studies by great journalists and reporters throughout the city that's keeping a flame to the fire when it comes to this issue. Mm-hmm. But this showing that two-thirds of children under the age of 6, it shows that there's a vicious cycle of lead exposure, starting with pregnant mothers. And once these children are born, they're exposed to lead contaminated water in their households. And then they go to daycare and schools and are going through the same cycle. So if anything, it just really shows that we need to be thinking strategically about how to speed up this process.
And we'll dig more into some of the points you raised there, Shakina. Brenda, that threshold that the study used was one part per billion, right? Imagine a half teaspoon of lead in an Olympic-sized swimming pool. Mm-hmm. The federal government uses a different standard. Can you just give us some context about these levels?
Yeah, so currently the EPA has a 15 parts per billion action level for any water system to take action on educating or replacing the lead pipes with the presence of lead. They have currently updated that lead and copper rule to be 10 parts per billion in order to take action. It's currently not in effect yet, but we're waiting for the new rule to come into effect, hopefully this fall.
Okay.
But that's still 10 parts per billion. It exceeds what the Center for Disease Control says is acceptable for lead, right? Yeah. We know that there is no safe level of lead, and even one part per billion can have effects, especially like on children, on pregnant mothers. It could cause miscarriages, infertility. We're seeing a lot of like attention deficit disorders and learning disabilities from children. And I think a lot of the times, like, people don't make that connection between contaminated water in their home and like the health impacts that they're having in their home. And many people are going to go without even knowing that that's something that's impacting them.
Yeah. A statement from the city reads in part, it offers free water testing and takes action by sending a plumber, sanitary engineer, and electrician to homes that test over the federal benchmark for lead in drinking water, which is the 15 parts per billion that you mentioned, Brenda. Michael, let's bring you in here. Why are there so many lead pipes in Chicago in the first place?
Well, the plumbing code required it until Congress banned the practice in 1986. That's number one. There's reporting by myself and former WBZ reporter Monica Eng that found that the plumbers union was essentially co-opted by the lead industry, which was once very present here in Chicago. And while other cities, Boston, for example, New York, went away from that practice before World War II, we kept doing it. And so any home or two flat, three flat sometime in some cases that was built before 1987 likely is getting their water through a lead straw, essentially, a lead service line that conveys water from the main underneath the street. You know, there's so many things that are just so frustrating about this, not just the decisions that were made in the past, but more recently. So we had Mayor Emanuel, Mayor Lightfoot, they borrowed hundreds of millions of dollars to replace water mains because many of them are old and leaking.
Yeah.
And that's very important. Conservation, very important. We only get to take so much water from Lake Michigan every day as a region. So that was a big step towards conserving water. The thing of it is, they would go around the city digging up streets, and when they would install the new water main, they would hook it up to the same lead service lines. They didn't pull them out then. So there was a great opportunity, probably for a little less money than what they're going to end up spending by going back onto those same streets and tearing up the streets again and then replacing the lead service lines.
What you just described just defeats the purpose.
It sure seems like it. And so what happened is because of the kind of the Byzantine way that federal regulations work, that 15 parts per billion mentioned, that doesn't actually trigger any kind of action. They get to average that out, and there's only certain official regulatory testing that is done. We reported back in 2016 that Chicago, more lead service lines, as we talked about, than any city in the country.
Right.
They only have to test 50 homes every 3 years. And most of the homes that the water department has traditionally used for this testing are owned by water department employees.
Right.
Or retirees on the far northwest or far southwest sides, not really representative of the city.
Yeah.
And so these testing kits that you mentioned, that was the data that the Johns Hopkins researchers tapped into. I looked at that, an earlier version of that, back in 2018. There's lead in water detected through those kits in every neighborhood area in this city.
Yeah.
What's perplexing is it's intermittent, and so you can't predict it. So each one of those tests is essentially a snapshot. So some days could be more, some days could be less.
Yeah, the city's replaced 5,395 lead pipes so far. This is according to the Department of Water Management. Talk us through, Shakina, what the pace of replacement has looked like, because that doesn't sound like it's enough.
Definitely. I think in the grand scheme of things, knowing that we have around 409,000 known lead service lines, that's a really small number. I do want to give the Johnson administration some credit, because early on he laid out a Green New Deal for water that showed that by 2027, their administration plans to replace around 44,000 lead pipes. And so that's going to be in combination with water main breaks. So anytime a water main breaks, a lead service line will be replaced.
Mm-hmm.
And then also the separate efforts that are taking place, whether it's the different programs that they offer at the Chicago Department of Water Management or people opting in to replace their line, they have outlined a plan. The problem is that, you know, how do we speed up this replacement knowing that the cost are higher on average compared to other cities who've already done this work and have done it well.
Mm-hmm.
We're around $30,000 for a single replacement in the city of Chicago. And when we're thinking about federal funding and how it's limited, as well as the loans that we're taking out, $30,000 per line doesn't allow that money to stretch really far.
Yeah.
So how do we get those cost numbers down so we can not only speed up the replacement, but also make sure that's affordable?
As I mentioned, Brenda, this issue especially impacts our Black and Latino communities, as well as low-income residents. So talk more about how equity fits into this issue.
Yeah, so the study showed that Black and brown communities were less likely to be tested for lead and more likely to have lead in their water. They are also less likely to be able to pay for the lead service line replacement. These communities also have a high percentage of renters, and landlords have no incentive to replace the lead service lines in their home. So that's another issue. The current program that the city offers is an opt-in program that has certain regulations to be able to replace the lead service line.
Yeah.
And there's no program that incentivizes renters to take part in that. One thing that we've seen in other cities is to have an opt-out program where everybody gets their lead service line replaced and you would opt out of getting your lead service line replaced. That happened in Newark, New Jersey, and that really helped speed up that process. It also really helped with that equity issue where there was absentee landlords that were not taking action and removing the lead service lines in the homes of low-income homeowners.
You think we could do something like that here?
I think it's possible. I mean, currently there is an ordinance that Alderman Villegas has proposed to have a pilot program of something of that sort where we go block by block replacing lead service lines, and it would be an opt-out service. I think that the ordinance might need some work, but I think it's definitely possible. And I think if we're able to identify sources of funding that can help pay for that, I think that we can definitely do that.
Mm-hmm.
I think the other issue when it comes to lead service lines and Black and Latino communities is also the understanding of what lead even is. I mean, at El Bejo, we do a lot of community engagement and resource fairs where we talk to folks, and we're the first people that tell them, like, hey, you have a lead service line in your home. These are the actions that you should take to mitigate the harm, especially if you have children.
Right.
And a lot of the times people are like, oh, my God, like, I didn't know that.
What,
like,
is that? And I'm shocked.
Right. And, like, what can I even do?
Right.
I definitely think that we need to, like, improve, like, just, like, the community engagement and the public education piece. Because if you're telling people the water that we're drinking in Chicago is safe, people aren't going to have an incentive to want to replace their lead service lines.
Right.
And we should be equipping them with the tools to be able to, one, just protect their families and also increase participation in the programs that already exist in
right.
the city.
Mm-hmm. It's more than just the awareness piece at yeah. that point. I want to circle back to something you mentioned earlier, Shakina, because we are focusing today on the health outcomes of children, of course, which we know that they're especially vulnerable. But you brought up the health of mothers earlier. Say more on that.
For sure. I think when we talk about lead service line replacement, we can get into the weeds and get really wonky about what that looks like and what that means, and focusing particularly on, like, the contractor's work. But this is a public health crisis. This is also an environmental justice issue. And so we have to really center the individuals who are most impacted. And so when we think about pregnant mothers, Brenda had already alluded to this, but even pre-birth or during pregnancy, mothers who are exposed to contaminated drinking water can be at risk for low birth weight, permanent damage to nervous systems and of the fetus. Mm. Even when children are born, even the lowest level exposure can lead to behavioral issues and emotional issues that children have to navigate for decades, right, of them being alive.
Yeah.
And so when we see these type of numbers of 2/3 of children under the age of 6 exposed, you know, we're not giving kids a fair shot to really lean into their full selves and actually go through the developmental process in a way that's healthy and safe. And so how are we making sure we're mitigating this early on? And that requires coordination from all different city departments to make sure that we're speeding this up as quickly as possible.
Michael, the city's put this particular focus on daycares. Let's talk about that. I mean, what can you tell us about those efforts? And I wonder if you think there's anywhere else that they should be given this sort of extra attention.
Yeah, so a state law required this to be a priority. You know, again, it's been kind of slow, especially with the...
So does it not look like it's a priority so far?
Well, and it's just like the overall program. They've done some work, but it's just not enough. So they have placed an emphasis on these home daycares in part. So there's like a funding stream separate from these other funding streams devoted to that. But the pace is really slow. And I think Brenda brought up a really good point that when folks don't know that they're being exposed, in most cases, you can't see the lead in your water. You know, the Flint water crisis back in 2015 was not just lead. It was also everything in the pipe started coming through. And so people, you saw these very...
like the water.
Alarming pictures
brown
of brown and green water. So, you know, you knew something was wrong in Flint right there. We don't necessarily know that here. And it's much like the lead paint problem, which is still a lingering problem here in Chicago because we have a lot of older housing. Most of the time, it's the dust that children are ingesting. And so if you talk to city health officials, they'll still say that lead-based paint is the main risk factor.
Yeah.
The problem is we only know that because when children are diagnosed with lead poisoning. So we're not doing the proactive work as a city, as a nation, really, to prevent this. And this is where it really gets at the disparity between the largely white, wealthy population of Chicago and Black and Latino neighborhoods. Back in 2015, I found that in certain census tracts in the city, Black and Latino census tracts, mostly on the south and west sides, the rate of lead poisoning was actually going up after many years of decline. Whereas in predominantly white neighborhoods, it had all but disappeared. And whether that was from lead-based paint or from water, they still can't tease that out. The city likes to tell you that it's all just the lead paint issue. But because, once again, like I said before, that the lead in water can be so intermittent, that is another potential source of exposure, and you don't know when you're getting it because you can't see it.
So how do we speed this up? We've talked about how this replacement process is moving so slowly. Brenda, you talked about this that opt-out program that happened in other cities across the country. I mean, anyone else have thoughts about making this happen faster for us here in Chicago, Shagina?
For sure. I think we have different blueprints that have already been laid out for us. We have Benton Harbor, Michigan, who is a neighbor of us here in the Midwest. And then we can look in Newark, New Jersey, who they replaced around 27,000 lead service lines and way quicker than we're doing here in Chicago. And they did it efficiently and equitably.
Mm-hmm.
I think Brenda had already touched on, you know, doing the block by block replacements versus these one-offs that we're currently doing.
Yeah.
Not only will it save the city money, it would also increase efficiency. Newark was really unique in the sense that they require utility finance or utility funded lead service line replacement. So they really tapped into the equity issue here, because having the water utility pay for the full cost of replacement really alleviated the financial burden that,
I see,
you know, that everyday residents had to take on.
Yeah.
And also the right to entry provision, allowing residents to provide contractors permission to replace their lead pipe versus actually having to chase down landlords.
Right.
I think having all three of those strategic decisions in place really allow us to get that work done efficiently and equitably. It's just a matter of political will in the city of Chicago, as well as, you know, strategic visioning to figure out what will work here and what won't.
Yeah.
But mm-hmm. we need to give it a chance.
Yeah, because costs for replacement are high, right, Michael?
Yeah, I mean, they've been high in most cities that have started this. And then over time, they find ways of becoming more efficient. The good news in Chicago, they've learned, or maybe they've learned from other communities, that instead of digging up the whole street, they can punch a hole in the street, and they have a machine that essentially pulls out the lead line mm-hmm. while putting a safer copper line in the house. And so you have a crew that hooks it up on one end, hooks it up on the other end, boom, done.
I see.
And like Brenda and Shakir said, that it's like you can do that, boom, boom, boom. And the city did that in a block in Little Village early last year, wasn't it, Brenda?
Yeah, 31st and Ridgeway.
Yeah, 31st and Ridgeway. And I was there that day. And, you know, you had some people who opted out.
Yeah.
But they just went down the block and got it done. One thing that always sticks out to me that I haven't seen so much from the Chicago Department of Water Management that we've seen in other cities, and what comes to mind is Detroit, also Newark. Well before they were planning to replace water lead service lines on a particular block, they would have people, you know, pull up lawn chairs, just talk to the neighborhood and, you know, answer questions. We haven't really seen that yet too much. And so I think that was also something with the Ridgeway project. They just kind of sprung it on folks really quickly.
Yeah.
And some people were just, you know, it just really, you're going to dig up my yard? I'm 80 years old. You know, I haven't died yet, blah, blah, blah. You know, all this
people
other kind of stuff, right?
That.
And
yeah.
So that outreach is something that I think the city of Chicago could do a much better job of.
Yeah, a spokesperson for the Department of Water Management says the city has introduced corrosion control to mitigate lead and offers free water testing and also has 5 programs to remove service lines. You can check out resources at leadsafechicago.org or you can call 311. Brenda, how can we improve messaging to residents to understand how to keep their families safe?
Yeah.
You talked a bit about what you've been doing in Little Village.
Yeah, I think it's just more of taking that proactive approach, right? Like if you don't know if you have a lead service line, there's an inventory online where you could look up your address. You could look up your address, see if you have a lead service line. If it's suspected to be lead, you know, try to use a water filter. There's specific water filters that should be used to actually remove out the lead. I think the ones that the city provides are zero water filters. You could also buy those at like a Target or at like any store. And just making sure that like you're taking preventative measures to protect like
yeah.
that water. I think the city, like Michael just alluded to, needs to do a lot better at like just connecting with folks. I think that they need to bridge like that like trust gap that they have with like their customers in order to be able to run an effective program, in order for each neighbor to like tell like their neighbors to, you know, get their lead service line replaced for free if they can, right? I think that that's something that has been successful in like other cities.
Right.
I think they need to be showing up to like community events and being a more public facing department and making it known that this is an issue that needs to be addressed, an issue that is like a priority for the city to, you know, conquer.
Yeah.
I think
yeah.
this is, there's no other city in the country that has a challenge as big as Chicago does. But I think we know better and we should be doing better to make sure that we're protecting the public health of like people throughout Chicago.
We mentioned this early on. A 2021 state law requires Chicago to remove all lead pipes within 50 years. And the EPA's lead and copper rule could put Chicago, you know, under a slightly tighter timeline. Shakina, are we actually on track to do even that?
For sure. I think with the lead and copper rule improvements was unveiled a couple months ago. Advocates across the country have, you know, submitted public comment. Residents have been engaged. So we're waiting right now to figure out what the actual rule is going to look like. We're in the finalization period of that right now.
Yeah.
But Chicago was one of the handful of cities that received an extension to replace their lead service lines, while majority of the country, if the rule remains intact, will have to replace their lead lines within 10 years. Chicago, as mentioned, was already on a 50-year timeline. We around a 45 to 55-year extension from the EPA.
Mm-hmm.
And I think advocates across the country are just saying, you know, if you are in a city like Chicago-based advocates, like, we need to shorten the timeline. It's unconscionable to tell residents that they have to wait decades or generations for safe drinking water. And so I think all of those pieces that we've mentioned today will allow us to get closer to that vision. But 50-plus years is unacceptable.
We'll have to leave it there for now. We've been talking with Shakina Perry, who's Senior Policy Advocate for Environmental Health for the Natural Resources Defense Council, Michael Hawthorne, who's an environment reporter at the Chicago Tribune, and Brenda Santoyo, who's a Water Justice Program Manager for Little Village Environmental Justice Organization. Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Max Lubbers and edited by Meha Ahmed. It was mixed by Brenda Ruiz. To hear more perspectives on issues close to Chicagoans, make sure to subscribe to this podcast and head over to wbez.org/reset for a full archive of our interviews. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Thank you for listening.
Have you ever wondered why anyone drinks Malort? Or if there are actually lobsters in the Chicago River? Then listen to the Curious City podcast, where we answer all your questions about Chicago and the region. WBEZ's Curious City is part of the NPR network and available wherever you find your podcasts.